Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, the show that offers you tips and strategies to help speakers build the business of their dreams. Now, here's your host, 30-year industry veteran and business coach, Jane Atkinson.
Hey, welcome back to the show, everyone. Here at the Wealthy Speaker Podcast, we are constantly thinking about how you can earn more money. And today we're going to talk about leveraging your expertise for multiple streams of income. We have Michelle May, MD, here with us, who does a terrific job of this. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks, Jane. Good to talk to you.
Oh, I'm so glad to kind of unpack your business model. Tell everybody about your background and how you came to the business that you have today.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I am an MD. I practiced medicine for about 16 years, but long before that, I began struggling with yo-yo dieting and went through that whole process through high school, college, medical school, and into my practice, and saw that there was really a lot of people struggling with this issue. They were dieting and then, you know, cycling, and just was a big problem. And so that looked like an opportunity for me personally to solve my own issues. And when I did, I realized that I could really help a lot of other people. So at first I did both. I continued to practice medicine. I continued to develop these workshops and programs, but eventually that part of my life had taken on, you know, so, as you say, pick a lane, right? Mm-hmm. I was trying to do two things, not to mention raise a family. And so I decided to leave my medical practice and really focus all of my energy toward my passion, which is helping people heal their relationship with food through mindful eating.
Beautiful. And books have become a big cornerstone of your business. Let's talk about kind of your best-selling book and what all the other ones are.
Yes. You know, I wrote a workbook for the original workshops that we developed. And after 4 or 5 years of using it and continually revising it and improving it based on what we were learning from the work we were doing, we eventually got to the point, I say we because I was working with a team of a psychologist, a registered dietitian, and an exercise physiologist. And we got to the point where we thought we had to publish this thing. Mm. Well, I'm happy we did. I initially had an agent. She put it out to a whole bunch of people. This was way back in 2003, 2004. And I got a slew of rejection letters, things like, what do you mean diets don't work? People don't want to hear this. What's the magic bullet? And I was like, clearly they're not ready for this. Yeah. So I decided to self-publish that book. And for many years, that first book was called Am I Hungry? And for many years, that was my cornerstone book. But this is one of the things I would like everybody to hear is that your first work isn't going to be your best work. Mm. You've got to be willing to put it out there anyway, and then pull it back when it's time, time to revise it, update it, do something new, because you can't improve if you don't have something to improve upon.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So
Mark is really important. So Am I Hungry, though, has still become kind of language that you have moved out into a lot of different revenue streams. So I want to just kind of list all the revenue.
Well, let me, before we do that, I want to be really clear. So Am I Hungry is not my book anymore. Okay. I tried to pull that off of Amazon. We're still struggling because there's pirated copies. There's all kinds of things. So it's never like a straightforward thing. In 2010, I rewrote that book and added all the new things we'd learned in the 5 years of it being available. Now my book series is called Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat. Yeah. And I have taken that series and modified it for different specific audiences. For example, people with diabetes, students, people who struggle with emotional eating and binge eating. So we've been able to take the same model and then apply it elsewhere. But as you say, the name of my company is Am I Hungry? Yeah. I love that because it's such a door opener.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. So Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat is the most current book. And honestly, I have it. I can't say I've adopted it and used everything in it yet, Michelle. I'm still a work in progress. But oh boy, do I need this information. Okay, so books are one part. How many books now do you have under your belt?
I would say that I'm actively selling. There are 4 books and 3 workbooks. Okay. And a whole bunch of other publications, but yes.
Okay, that's impressive. So let's go next. I'll just give the list. So we've got virtual keynotes, workshops, virtual or live. You've got courses, you've got a community, you do retreats. And here's the big one, licensing and trainer. That's a train the trainer program. And I know people are going to hone in on that. So we're going to unpack each of those to allow our listeners to see kind of an option board and, you know, take what you want, leave the rest. There might be an idea that you've been thinking about for a while, and Michelle says something that just makes it that much easier for you to kind of move forward with. Okay, so let's talk right now about virtual keynotes. That could be a rainmaker for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it is. And of course, it was live at one point in the past. I mean, in person, I should say, because the virtual can be live or recorded, right? But yeah. So I love sharing this information in that keynote format. In a really short period of time, we can take somebody who is struggling with eating or even just struggling with their general well-being, because that's been a bit of a shift that I've made over the last few years, is I don't always lead with mindful eating. I think for a lot of people, they're just struggling with well-being in general. And I think a lot of organizations, a lot of companies are recognizing that their people need support. They need some tools and skills. And we have to stop doing things the same old way, because we're going to keep getting the same old results. So that has been really, for me, a big, not just a rainmaker, but for me, a really great way to make a big shift in a very short period of time. And I love virtual. As you know, I have been doing virtual work. I was a very early adopter. I was doing teleseminars and then webinars and, you know, all of these way, like 2006, we started doing our first virtual training. So that's been something that's been part of my business model from the beginning.
Right. So there wasn't as much pain moving into Zoom and things like that for you as there were. And for me too. I mean, we've been doing Zoom for a really long time. So this whole shift didn't hurt as much. Let's talk about workshops that you might offer, say, to corporate. Talk a little bit about those.
Right. So our main one is our Am I Hungry Mindful Eating Workshop. It's typically designed as an 8 module series, mostly given once a week. And it can be delivered by a live facilitator, myself or somebody that we've trained, or it can be delivered by an online self-paced kind of format. And of course, the facilitated version can be in person or it can be by webinar. So, you know, again, it's all the same content. It's just packaged in different ways that makes it easy for people to consume.
I want people to really recognize that. So let's say you write a book. The book is a keynote. The book is a workshop. The book could be a course. The book could be what you're talking about in your community and at your retreats. And you might license people to teach this material in the book. I mean, really, it all starts with one piece of content.
It really does. And I would add that it didn't actually start with the book, but as I was writing the book, I needed a way to structure the information that was really about knowledge transfer. So that's kind of how I think about the cornerstone of all of this, is I developed something that I named the Mindful Eating Cycle. And that Mindful Eating Cycle is my proprietary intellectual property. And as you said, it is the foundation. It is the way all of my books are organized. It is the way my Mindful Eating Keynote is organized. It's the way the workshops, the training, and so on. So I would take a step back even and say that it's really about developing content that's very specific to your expertise and delivering it in a way that is uniquely yours. You know, it may be that you do leadership, not mindful eating, and there's a lot of people doing leadership, but obviously you have to have a way of delivering it or packaging that information that is unique to you and that people can remember and use and actually move forward in their life, which is really what this is all about anyway.
Yeah, for sure. I remember when we went and put together the Wealthy Speaker School, we started with the framework of the Wealthy Speaker, and that framework of Ready, Aim, Fire has gone through everything that we've ever done. But really, the course was a much, much deeper dive on the content. And so it may not be as easy as just take the book and turn it into a course, but at least it's a starting place. You have your ideas down on paper. That's so important. Mm-hmm.
It really is important. And I think the discipline of writing a book and organizing it is really a big step toward being able to create content that can be shared in other ways.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we've got books, we've got virtual keynotes, we've got workshops, whether they be live or virtual. Let's move into course. So how did you structure your course? And you were probably doing courses way before courses were cool.
That's right. Yeah. So our online course is a virtual version of our live workshop. And so part of it was having to recreate a lot of the interactivity that we do. Even when I'm on stage as a keynote or doing a virtual presentation, you have to engage the audience. There has to be some involvement on their part. And so that's the tricky part of creating an online course is how do you get those participants to be taking what you're saying and applying it to their own lives and bringing it out the other direction. So the online course is a shorter version. It's very consumable. It's very scalable. So we have used it in extremely large organizations to be able to reach a lot of people in their organization with these mindful eating skills and very different from perhaps something like a Weight Watchers at Work where people are showing up to a meeting every week. This is foundational content that literally transforms the way people think about eating so that ultimately, they don't need to keep coming to a meeting week after week. They've learned this foundational information. And then it's a matter of practicing it until it becomes natural.
Beautiful. So one of the things that I think we both do is we support our course. Now, your course is small and consumable, where I think there are two schools of thought when it comes to developing a course. You've done it the Amy Porterfield style, where you've done it in a consumable fashion, whereas I've gone the Brooke Castillo route and we just add more and more content constantly and more layers. And so at the beginning, you kind of decide which route you're going to go. And we are constantly adding new lessons to the course.
Interesting that you say
that.
It'll
never be done.
No, I think it is interesting that you say that because that's the what we're talking about now is the online mindful eating program that companies can purchase at an affordable price for their employees. Mm-hmm. But we also train trainers and we have a mindful eating support community and other things. And we tend to take your model of loading content in. And I think perhaps just to kind of look at the pros and cons of it, mm-hmm. similar to I'm sure what you deal with is people get a bit overwhelmed. They don't know where to start. They don't know where to go. They don't know. They feel like, there's so much here. And so I would say that I lean on that side of providing too much information sometimes, but I get it because especially when you're training professionals, they need a lot of different tools and they're coming to it from similar to your situation. I might be training dietitians, psychologists, medical physicians, coaches, exercise people, workplace wellness people. And so they have a lot of different needs and will be going into their market in a lot of different ways. And so we need to provide them with a lot of different content. And we've been using this content for years. I've been teaching webinars and skill building sessions. So why not share what we've already created with people who are already invested with us?
There's a joke that Dan Sullivan uses for us as being slow learners. I'm so grateful that you're all slow learners. You know, a lot of us have been with his group for, I've been there for 7, 8 years. Lots of people have been there 15 and 20 years. And he's saying, I'm grateful that you're slow learners. Okay, so here's a distinction that somebody may want to think about. If they want to do a course that's a one-off, that maybe you can say, do a keynote and then sell the company to send a bunch of people through your course, and it's something that you don't manage, that might be that short and sweet course, that very finite amount of material that gets them across the finish line. But if you're developing any kind of community or membership like we are, our goal is to keep people in our school for years. And we have had people who have stayed with us for years, even before we had the school. They were just still hanging around and taking whatever we offered them. And so now we actually have a place for that. So I think that might be the determination. And you have people that you're training that you need to provide a whole host of different content for. So that makes perfect sense, Michelle.
Well, and the other thing that may be different from what I do than some of the others who are in this in the speaking world is we have both a direct to consumer facing list of things that we do, as well as a health and wellness professional list, as well as a corporate or organizational list of things that we do. And so it's all the same thing. I mean, it's all around mindful well-being, and the way that we deliver it and or the type of content they get really depends on what their needs are. So we're not I'm not this idea of having a million different offerings that's not what we do. We do one main thing, but we do it in a lot of different ways.
Right. So that's something, it's not always the easiest thing to manage all of those moving parts. And so you and I commiserate on these types of things all the time.
Yeah, we have very similar business models, interestingly, considering that we do completely different things.
And as a little sidebar, team is a really essential part to both of us. I have about 5 people on my team. How many do you have on yours?
Well, I have 2 employees and then a number of subcontractors that do various work for us. Yeah.
Right. So let's talk next about if someone wanted to have maybe a course and they want to kind of, okay, I need to help people more than just walk them through my course. I really want to engage with them. So that's where a community or a membership becomes involved. Talk about what you do for your community. What does that require of you, Michelle May?
So we have a mindful eating support community. We decided to do 3 levels depending on what people needed and what they were able or willing or needed to invest in that. And so our highest level includes 2 sessions of coaching every month. Now, here's where this gets interesting. I don't deliver those coaching sessions. We train other health and wellness professionals, other coaches to deliver our mindful eating coaching material. Mm-hmm. And so those particular sessions are done by those coaches. I don't employ them, but I subcontract with them. So if we have somebody who wants coaching as part of their package, then we pay those coaches to deliver that.
On a per session basis?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. They agree to do 2 sessions a month and we pay them a portion of the money that we bring in.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. So the middle level is the key level. That's I think where we can deliver the most value. It's also the best income stream long-term for us. Mm-hmm. And we're not having the additional coaching because people can purchase coaching outside of that. And one of the silver linings to this pandemic is I had kind of resisted doing coaching myself because I didn't have the time and couldn't always predict that it was going to be available because of travel. And so now I have started doing individual coaching at a higher fee than my coaches are doing. And I am loving it. It's perfect for a subset of my market that wants that. And it's been really wonderful for me to have boots on the ground. So as an aside, that coaching, I'm not doing the coaching within our support community. Some of you might be, that might be part of your business model, but that's not what I do. But our middle level includes our very active Facebook page. It's a private Facebook page, so nobody outside of the community can see that people are members of it, which is tricky because a lot of the work I do is not something that people are out there telling other people they're doing. So it, you know, it becomes a little bit tricky because people consider it to be a sort of a private thing that they don't want to talk about. And so that makes marketing a little bit tricky. But in that Facebook community, I'm there almost every day, just checking in, answering questions. The community, of course, supports one another. I also do one monthly skill building webinar where we add content like you were talking about. This is new content that wasn't already part of their base training. And now I have kind of started recycling that. I do have members who've been with me since the beginning, but I find that sometimes I need to revisit topics. So I'm not creating brand new content every month. And a couple times a year, I will invite one of the people we've trained to deliver that content to kind of freshen it up, give me a break. It definitely works when I'm traveling and I'm not available. So, and the other piece is one group coaching call per month that I do, where we just dive in and work on things. So those are the main issues. They also get access to the online mindful eating program as a way of keeping their skills fresh. Our lowest level just gets the skill building webinar and the Facebook page. And we also give some discounts to other things like retreats and other things. So we've kind of loaded the table, but I think the big value is the community. It's being with people who are on the same path, working together and having the expert or experts be able to stop in and say, hey, can we look at the way that happened? Let's see if we can figure out what's going on there. And right. That's really what people are paying for.
Yes, for sure. So lots of activity going on, but really not a ton of time from you. You've got your skill builder, you've got your group coaching session, and then you're kind of making sure that you answer any questions and things that come up. So I just want people to recognize that the time intensity is not huge. However, you do need to keep people engaged or you will lose them. The only people we've lost are people, Michelle, whose names I don't know. Like right. They were lurkers. They were like peeking over the shoulders of all the students, but they weren't participating.
Right.
And so I think it's really funny when I'll see somebody, if I see a cancellation, it's typically somebody that I don't know whose name
I never saw. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of hard to know which comes first. Are they, you know, are they not engaged? Yeah, it's hard to know. And it is tricky. I mean, I haven't found it in my community very effective for me to plant questions, seed questions. I try that once in a while. It doesn't seem to work very well. It seems that the engagement comes when people say, oh, we went out to dinner last night and this happened. Yes. And then the community gets in there and starts talking about what happened.
And what's great is they support each other and they give each other advice. A lot of times I'm actually watching and just seeing, oh, okay, they got what they needed and it didn't have to be from me.
Yeah. I love it when I can say what they said.
Yeah. Everybody just shared with you.
And that's the value, by the way, of what you said earlier of having people that are with you for a period of time, because you have new people coming in all the time. And then you have others that say, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. I promise it gets easier. You know, that they can also, and then it also rewards them for the progress that they've made. They can see it when they look back and see where people are starting from.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. All right, let's talk about retreats next. So we've talked about this. Both of us have, you came to my retreat in February in where were we? Phoenix?
Yes.
Last retreat of the year before all of the events went away. Mm-hmm. And then you were talking about doing your Sedona retreat. What's gone on with your retreats since COVID started?
Yeah. So we've been offering 2 or 3 retreats per year for a number of years. I mean, like you, I love that format. I love being in person with people. I love the community that's created. It's fun for me. We usually pick a location I want to go to. Yes. Although I live in Arizona, so oftentimes it does end up being Sedona or someplace else nearby, which is fine with me. I'm perfectly happy with that. We can integrate some hikes and lots of mindful eating experiences and other things, plus some downtime. So I love, love, love our 5-day, 4-night format. However, as you know, it's so expensive and so time consuming to work with venues and meal. And here's the thing, Jane, my husband's a professional chef. So when I have to fork out $35 for bacon and eggs that I know cost them $2 to do, I mean, it's painful.
Oh, but so that sprig of parsley made it worthwhile.
Oh, yes, of course. So we had to cancel a retreat. We had one planned in Colorado in April and the writing was on the wall. I canceled it. I did full refunds. I didn't commit people to anything. I just said, look, I'm not comfortable asking. I'm a doctor, so I'm not going to ask people to get on a plane with what was going on.
Right.
And fortunately, the venue that we had chosen gave us a full refund, no commitment.
That's miraculous.
It was miraculous, but I think they could see that they could get themselves into problems as well. So we divested ourselves of that retreat. And then we said, you know what, let's do this virtually. We've been doing virtual for a long time. We worked to kind of figure out what the format would be. We landed on 2 hours on Friday evening to kick it off, get people to know each other and lay some foundation. And then we do 9 to 2 Pacific on Saturday and Sunday.
Oh.
And so it works out pretty well timing wise, even those on the East Coast, they're starting in the afternoon, but they're not staying up late.
Right.
And we try to bring as many of the elements of our live retreat in as we can. We do mindful eating together at the lunch meals. Mm. I send them a little package of goodies that, not food goodies, but little tools. I use a lot of kinesthetic learning. I use a lot of anchors. I use a lot of different learning modalities, training modalities. So we send that to them ahead of time. And we do the best we can to create as much interaction, live interaction on Zoom as we can. I just finished one yesterday, so I'm still a little bit on fire from it because I cannot believe how beautifully it has translated. And I've had one person after the next say, this has been so awesome. I could never afford to come to a live when I couldn't take the time off. I didn't want to buy a plane ticket. It's expensive. So we've been able to take just the profit piece of it and get rid of all the expense piece of it and deliver the same content in a way that feels good for me. It makes it accessible to them. I will go back to some live retreats, but I will never stop doing virtual retreats. It's opened up a lane that I didn't know existed that people have really loved.
That is so beautiful. I'm actually writing down your hours and everything because I've been examining it. We have a lot on our plates right now, so I don't know if we'll do it, but typically February, March would be when we would run it. Mm-hmm. And if I go virtual, I probably will not go back to live.
Yeah.
Because of that massive hotel bill. And I know you can scrounge around and try to find lower cost places, but we have a brand to protect and we want to do it up in style.
Yeah. You know, we've done all versions. I mean, we've done the big Sedona retreats. We've also gone to, we specifically say rustic retreat at a kind of a cowboy sort of thing. People still show up expecting Miraval or Canyon Ranch, even though it says rustic all over the place. So people are still like, oh man, I thought this was gonna be like a spot. No. Not. I put pictures of the rooms in there.
What part is that? Didn't you understand?
Exactly.
So about how many people would you think is an ideal number for a retreat and how are you interacting with them? I have so many questions for you, but I won't hog the time for myself personally.
Well, we can definitely have conversation about that. And I'd be happy to give you some details for whatever it's worth for you. But it varies. We've had between 16 and 25, which is a great number. It makes it profitable, but manageable. Oh, and little tip. We will not do 25 again because it turns out on Zoom, if you have 25, then one person is on a second screen when you're in gallery mode. So right after the last one, I was like, okay, the cutoff, if I have 25 participants and myself, then it ends up pushing it onto two screens. So you have to kind of keep toggling between it. So little stuff like that, you don't know that ahead of time. So
probably y'all either do under 25 or just go for 50 or whatever the number
right,
is.
Then right. But for my work and probably yours, there is so much, I'm, as I said, very interactive. So I will have people off mute for periods of time if they don't have background noise. We use the chat window. I definitely do breakout groups of varying sizes depending on what the activity is. And that's actually been feedback that we get, collect feedback, of course, after every retreat.
Yeah, what's the favorite part?
One. They love that. It's so valuable to them. So we've
been breakouts?
Increasing breakout okay. groups.
Okay.
And we use them for lots of different types of activities. And then we bring everybody back together and do a little group share about, you know, some of the key points. But we don't, that way people are getting to say what's on their mind, but it's not going to take 3 hours because you're having every single person speak.
Yes. Beautiful. Yes. I said this on the last podcast. You know, virtual is here to stay. So we need to learn how to do it well. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to do a retreat, we're going to figure out a way to do it well. I think part of my strength has always been the relationships that I have out in the business. So bringing in guests and things like that is just something that comes pretty naturally to me. And then doing these fun exercises and things like that. Yeah. I really love that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would think 12 hours of time with me facilitating, but I've got my flip chart. I see you have your flip chart behind you. I'll have my flip chart out at periods of time. And, you know, we still, it's a training, it's a workshop, an interactive workshop and training session. And I, the way my brain works is if somebody says something in one segment, well, this is going on, my brain holds on to that. And then a half an hour later, I might say, like Mary said, when she was struggling, you know, I can call that back. And so it feels very personal to people because it is. I mean, I'm really taking in with 24 people on a screen. I can take in information and be able to include them in the conversation. And so they're feeling heard because they're being heard.
Yeah. And I love that you're not doing these massive hours. 9 to 2 feels doable.
Mm-hmm. And I put in the schedule, I have the meal, obviously I teach mindful eating. So they know ahead of time to have a meal prepared that they can, we'll take a break for 10 minutes, go get your food heated or whatever, we include that. And we definitely practice right then and there. No. I don't schedule the breaks in, but I tell them at the beginning, we will be taking breaks. I need the flexibility to do the break when it feels natural and when I can perceive that all of us need a little downtime. The breaks may sometimes be 5 minutes. Let's go. I learned that sometimes I need to do a 10 or 15 minute break. Mm-hmm. And then I also encourage people to pretend they're away at a retreat and plan something fun for themselves that Saturday evening, you know, whether they're going to take a bath or watch a movie with their partner or whatever, that they actually give themselves some downtime to immerse themselves in the content.
Yeah, that's really important. When we do our strategic coach virtual days, I really love to go away and do them somewhere else, like not at my normal desk, so that it feels a little bit different.
And it was interesting. Somebody commented on this one. She said, you know, I've always wanted to come to one of your in-person retreats, but I think in a way, being in my own house and learning this content, it's not like I went away and now I have to come back and figure out how it applies. I was here, which was great.
Yeah, oh, that's really
our cool. Next one in early November is a emotional eating and binge eating. And so I have invited the co-author of my Eat What You Love, Love What You Eat for binge eating. She's a therapist. Mm-hmm. And so she will be with me kind of guiding people through some of the activities. And then she's going to do some follow-up group coaching with them. She can't do therapy remotely because of the legality of it, but she can do some group coaching with them. And so that has a little bit of a different flavor, But we laugh, we have fun, we keep people, you know, that's just my style. No matter whether I'm on a big stage or on Zoom, I want to have fun with what we're doing.
That's really good. Well, you're going to spend all this time with these people. You definitely want them and you to have fun. Okay, let's get to the big one, because I know people are probably really interested in licensing and training. Train the trainer. How complicated is it to license your material, Michelle? It feels like you'd have to be pretty organized to get this going.
Yeah, so we started that in 2006 and have evolved it since then. We started it with our Cornerstone Mindful Eating program back then. And initially, this is actually how I started doing retreats. The first two trainings were live in a retreat format. And then we decided to switch those over to webinar trainings. And then eventually it became an online training, because now we have people, we actually have people in more than 30 countries who've been licensed to offer these programs. So obviously people are on different time zones and it doesn't work for them to always do live. Plus, I don't need to keep doing it live over and over and over and over and over again. It's not necessary.
Right.
So we, you'll have to figure out how this applies to your business model. But in my business model, my goal was to change the way the world thinks about eating. So for me, I don't want to be the only person that can teach this stuff. And that might be different for somebody who's got has one keynote and they're on stage. Mm-hmm. But if you have content that you know the world can benefit from and you're willing to share it and you have the ability to transfer that information effectively, then it becomes a wonderful way of leveraging your expertise and creating ongoing, in my case, passive income. So now we have our mindful eating program. For example, I update them every year or two. I update the content, the slides, the everything, make sure everything's current and looking beautiful and fresh.
Right, because so, they're going to take those slides and go use them.
Exactly. Yes. So here's the process. So let me give you guys a specific idea. Sure. Let's say you have a workshop or a training that you do. Mm-hmm. I then offer it to the public, like a direct-to-consumer webinar. I invite people in. I tell them it's also going to be recorded for training purposes. Mm-hmm. I then do that workshop over 8 weeks by Zoom. I record it. And then my project manager takes that content and loads it into our training portal. So they have the people who are being trained have that content. We have a manual, a very specific manual that is keyed to the slide number, to the what I did with it, which I think works pretty well, is that there's a wide column, about 2/3 of a page with the content, and then a third that has notes about what chapter we're on or what page that activity is or where it is in the workbook, what slide it is. And then I also copied the content on that 2/3 side and I put it into the notes section of the PowerPoint. So people can see the same information in different ways depending on how they use it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they may not get confused this way, because you're really laying it out very logically.
And that's feedback we get. I mean, when we ask people, we always ask for feedback about it, and the marks are over the top in terms of the value and the content. And one thing people will sometimes say, as we talked about earlier, is there's so much information here. There's so many things. So we try to keep it simple. And there's also this if you need it.
Yeah. Well, the thing that we do inside the school is really have a lot of communication about don't get overwhelmed, just stay on track and where you are in the ready and fire process. And that's what helps people not be overwhelmed. I'm sure you have something similar.
Yeah, it's tricky. But the way the licensing works is that somebody registers with us to be trained. Now, this is a bit of an aside. You have to decide whether those people need specific qualifications. We went through a lot of discussion about that. But for most of our programs, I didn't want people mailing me, you know, graduate certificates. And I did not that. Here's the thing. I don't want to do all that work.
Yeah.
I want people to self-select whether they feel that they're qualified to do this. And it really works out beautifully. People do a good job of self-selecting. So we do require that people who do our binge eating program have a therapist on their team. They don't have to be a therapist themselves, but somebody in their team has to be trained. Okay. So they sign up for licensing, and when they initially register, they get a 15-month license and all of the content that they will need. And so that 15-month license gives them about 3 months to complete the training, and then their first year license is included in that. And they get all their PowerPoints, their facilitator guide, their book, their workbook, et cetera. And then every year after that, to maintain their license, then they pay a renewal fee to continue to stay with us so that we're able to provide them with updated content. And we know that the people who are out there teaching are using the most current content. They're not teaching something that I developed in 2006, for example. We know that they're using the most current information. Now, we started with our mindful eating program, but as we talked about, I took that same mindful eating cycle model and I adapted it for diabetes. I adapted it for people who struggle with binge eating. I teach a course at Arizona State University, so I teach people to teach this at colleges and universities. So we develop naturally a training program for each of those areas, and I did the same thing. I just recreated the same process. I offer a live workshop, invite consumers to it. We record it. We use it as our training. Now, once somebody has a license with us, they can do any of the additional trainings at a pretty nominal fee. We want them to consume as much of our information. And we have a very high percentage of our licensees who are licensed to offer multiple programs, because once they know the mindful eating cycle model, then they just want to learn, okay, what if I'm working with somebody with diabetes? What if I'm working with somebody who's had bariatric surgery? And so they can very easily do that additional training. We don't charge them an additional licensing fee. It's one fee, no matter how many programs you've been trained to offer. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And it just sounds like it's very well thought out. You've been doing this a long time, Michelle. And I know that when people come to you, you have it all kind of figured out for them. And now that doesn't mean that way back in the beginning, and I want people to really not compare themselves and where they are to you, and you're how many years into this now?
Right, 21 years.
21 years. Right. Okay. So this is 21 years of refining and systems and really developing those things, but it's incredibly impressive. And I'm excited
to lay out the short little clue. If you, here's the thing. Here's one of the things we learned. If you, as you're listening to this, if you start thinking, oh, well, I could do my leadership, my basic leadership program, I could do leadership for managers, I could do leadership, you know, and you're already starting to think about where you go. First of all, follow Jane's advice. Start with one thing. Don't get overwhelmed and then do nothing. However, what we learned, because we started with the mindful eating program, didn't realize how many other programs we were going to develop, what we ended up doing was we created a baseline licensing agreement, and there's an addendum for each of the programs they offer. Mm-hmm. So that has been so much more simple because we train coaches. So if you want to be trained in coaching, you get a coaching addendum. I don't have to keep rewriting the license every single time. It's one license and then these simple addendums. So there's a little hint to kind of think about and save yourself some trouble in the long run.
That's really good, Michelle. Wow. Okay. We have covered a lot of ground today. What's one thing that you wish you would have known earlier in the game? I'm totally putting you on the spot here.
Oh my. So much. I think I didn't realize how sometimes you just have to accept that it's going to be continually evolving. I think it was sort of like, okay, I'm going to do this and then that'll be it. So that's one thing. The other piece is what we really haven't talked about is really how much it takes to market all this stuff.
Yes.
So sometimes I love creating the programs, and sometimes I just have to stop creating programs and just spend time selling what I already have. And that is a tricky, challenging piece of this.
It really is. And you and I both share that dilemma where we can only launch so many things in a year without exhausting our list. And so we have some really great products that get neglected.
Yes, exactly. I know exactly. And that's the downside of having so much. I mean, honestly, is it confuses the buyer, it confuses the consumer. And so in some ways, right now, that what we've been doing with our time during COVID is really trying to simplify our messages and be more clear about what we can do for people.
Yes.
And ironically, also broadening my keynote topic, because it's more than mindful eating. The more that I do this, the more I realize it's about vibrant living. And I think that's a message that people are really needing right now.
Yes, for sure. That's very, very timely. Michelle May, thank you so much for your time today and sharing your knowledge with our listeners.
Well, thanks for being part of my journey, Jane. You've had your piece in all of this as well. So I appreciate you.
Tell everybody where they can get in touch with you.
My website is amihungry.com. It's actually currently undergoing a transition, so we'll see what it looks like when you get there. And there's a contact form on there, my speaking's on there, my books. We do lots, by the way, a lot of, like you do, a lot of free resources, handouts, lots of blogs and videos and things, because, you know, people need to be able to consume this first to begin to trust you. And so there's a lot of information there. I will say, I should have said this earlier, but one of my biggest marketing tools is we give away the first chapter of our book for free. Often, yeah. We want people to know what it's about and give them an idea of what that mindful eating cycle looks like to understand that, yeah, there's a real method here.
That's really good. Really good. Well, thank you again, Michelle. And if you're listening in, I hope you'll let us know that you've gotten some ideas. Let us know through a comment or drop me an email, jane@speakerlauncher.com. I would love to hear it. And with that, we will say, see you soon, wealthy speakers. Bye for now, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. If you need help building the speaking business of your dreams, head over to wealthyspeakerschool.com and take advantage of our 20-minute next step call. Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast.